Welcome to the Help Myself Podcast. I am your host, John M. Singletary Sr., and I find it a privilege and an honor to keep that senior in there because I got my junior, aka LJ. Listen, I'm excited about today's episode. I'm going to say how excited I am probably about five or six more times during the span of this interview. But I honestly believe that this is probably one of the most impactful interviews that I've done. I'm just excited about it. Today, we have none other than the amazing Dr. Tanette Powell. She just wanted me to call her Tanette, but she's the doctor. She's amazing. She's an activist. She's an educator. She is a fierce mama. But she is a Black woman. She's brilliant in every way that counts. And we want to get into her intro video. And during the episode, we were talking about some things. And I was talking about an appearance she had on CNN where she was discussing the prison pipeline, you know. And there was a term that I was looking for and I was not able to locate that. The term is the Black escalation effect. That is where our children, Black children, are penalized and disciplined at more severe levels for equal or even lesser infractions in school. And so that creates an opportunity to escalate each situation to the point to where you've drastically hurt the child's educational and even freedom. So, you know, you create that pipeline. So we talked about that and a myriad of other things. As a matter of fact, the brilliance of Dr. Powell caused the interview to go in a direction that even I didn't anticipate. And I think we're all going to be better for it. So I'm appreciative and I'm excited about this. So let me get off of the mic and out in front of the camera so that you can experience this amazing interview.
I teach my kids all the time, education is your passport.
Tanette Powell learned that the hard way. Long before her sons were born, she was labeled a troublemaker. As the daughter of a drug-addicted father, she struggled in school and life.
I was expelled from school when I was 3 years old in preschool. And when I first got the phone call about JJ, I immediately thought back to that. You know, at a young age, I was told that I was a bad kid in school.
Tanette proved them wrong, eventually got her college degree, wrote a book, and became an accomplished public speaker, even giving a TED Talk.
Well, I'm gonna wait here. So I sat at that bathroom door, and as I sat there, because it was late and because I was a child, I fell asleep. My dad tells me that after I fell asleep and he came out of that bathroom, he carried me to my bed and put me in bed. And when I woke up that next morning, I didn't remember a filthy man. I didn't remember someone who had been using drugs, even though I knew that my father had an addiction. I remembered the man that put me to bed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Help Myself Podcast. Listen, I am super excited, as I often am, but I really am. Like, if y'all can see it in my eyes, I could barely sleep last night. I was so excited about this interview. We've got someone special here to close out Women's History Month, somebody who I've been trying to get on her schedule for a long time, but we made it happen. Today, we have Dr. Tanette Powell. Let me give her a quick introduction, and then I know you got the long term, but I have to talk about how amazing she is. She's a storyteller, a disruptor, equity practitioner, DEI consultant, an award-winning author, speaker, activist, mama, storyteller, freedom dreamer. She's the mother of three beautiful Black boys. And, you know, she says it on her website, and I love this, that existing in this world as a Black mother raising three Black boys is an act of resistance. It's an act of boldness. It's an act of defiance. Her career embodies that same boldness, resistance, and defiance across sectors, including in educational, nonprofit, and entertainment spaces. She freedom dreams and moves through connection and collaboration in pursuit of liberation. She's an equity practitioner, published author, award-winning public speaker. And today she's our esteemed guest here on the Help Myself podcast, Dr. Tunette Powell. How are you?
Yes, thank you for having me. I mean, that introduction was so fruitful, and I'm just so honored to be here in the space with you. I'm also excited.
Yeah, listen. Now, me and Tunette, Dr. Powell, you know, I'm not going to get that messed up.
Y'all need
to know doctor in the house. We were talking about how it feels like we know each other. I'll tell y'all a little bit about it. So her and her husband, he was in the Air Force and she was married to him. So she was in too. And they were stationed at, once you get on it, you can't get off at Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska. And I had an office out there and I had some people that worked for me and I would be out there all the time. We were never able to connect. But I remember on one of my trips, that was when you were on CNN during that time talking about, you know, somebody, she was talking about a phenomenon that we called the Black, just had the name of it.
Where school to prison pipeline.
Yes, there we go. The school to prison pipeline, how they treat Black students with the same disciplinary actions worse and with more severe punishment than they do their white counterparts. So she was talking about that on CNN. Then y'all moved out to LA. I had an office out in LA at LA Air Force Base in El Segundo. I was out there. I had some people working for me there. Never got together. And now she's back in her hometown of San Antonio, Texas. And I have not stepped foot in San Antonio, Texas in 5 years. So, but we're going to make this happen. You know, I'm just glad that you were able to come on and talk about the amazing things that you are doing. So just to get us started, what you got going on currently? What are you working on now?
Well, you know, that question is always a hard one for me because yeah. I get asked that question a lot. And I think, you know, there's always work to be done. I want to just start and say that, like, what I'm most excited about is that I have time, right? And that I am resting, like, way more than I was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago. And I've worked very hard to build that out into my life. And so when people ask me that, I never want to respond that I'm as busy as I've ever been. Like, I want to be as rested as I've ever been. And I feel like for the first time I'm in that place. And so it's given me so much opportunity to just be creative. And sometimes that's through just lying down or spending time with family, having coffee or chai, because I drink chai with friends. And so my writing has really kicked off. And so one of the things, you know, I've been in these entertainment spaces as of recent, and I've really been interested in how we tell Black stories, when Black characters, you know, are featured in different, are casted and featured in different shows. How are we telling their stories and how are we thinking about them and centering them and humanizing them? And so I have been working on a TV show for the last couple of years, and there's one Black family on that show. And it is, it has been just such a joy to think about how we capture them. There's a husband and a wife, there's two kids, how we portray the young boy on the show who is in a classroom, right? Speaking of school to prison pipeline, how do we make sure that we are not making him mischievous or some of these other things, but allowing him to be innocent in this space, right? And so now I'm writing my own stuff. I'm working on my first TV movie. It is gonna be a rom-com that is an all Black cast. And that's really important for me. Right. Like I take on some of these very hard topics, whether it be school to prison pipeline or thinking about system induced collective trauma and the ways that systems continue to perpetuate anti-Blackness. Those are very, very heavy things. And also now that I have this new creative space, I'm finding time to write about Black love.
right? And Black romance in ways that I think are just as important and just as liberating. And so there's lots of things I'm working on. I want to start there because I think that there's something powerful about writing our stories, telling our stories in ways that humanize us.
Listen, first off, you know, like if you need somebody in that movie to be like the janitor in one of the scenes, your boy is available. Holler at me. You know what I'm saying? Like I'll be back there sweeping. I won't even make no. I love that. I love the way you started off. Let's start there because this is something that I'm learning, but it's also me personally to push back on. And it's this idea of strong. And it's an idea that always wants to be put on Black women, forward-facing, doing what needs to be done, stepping up, especially when nobody else is stepping up. And so we put this moniker strong, and people don't understand that strength is something that we tap into because it's needed. But I don't want you to define me as strong. I want to be defined as so many other things. And for you to talk about rest, that was so important to talk about reclaiming your time and being able to be in peaceful spaces and not always be in a space where I'm working, I'm writing, I'm advocating, I'm fighting, I'm this, that, and the other. That was so important. I think that, and this is my personal opinion, please feel free to get me, you know, snatch me up and get me right. But I think that's such an important thing to talk about is that we deny so much of the greatness of Black women by consistently demanding, whether it be intentionally or unintentionally, that they be working and that they be showing up in a way that is beneficial for us instead of allowing them to be, especially in a restful state. So that was powerful. And that was a lot. I see why you don't like answering that question.
Yeah, it's tough, right? And like, I think, you know, most people want me to just name off every work-related professional thing that I'm doing and be busy.
Guilty,
and
guilty.
Don't get it wrong. Like I am, I have all of those things. I could talk about those, right? Somewhere there's a CV or resume you can just look at and read. But I just feel that I am much more interested in like who I am holistically. And I think I've had to ask myself over the last couple of years that like, who are you outside of motherhood, wifehood, and workhood? And that took a minute, like, what do you love doing? And I do think to your point about this idea of strength, it's like, nah, I'm tired of just having to be the strong one. Like I need ease in my life, right?
Softness,
rest. And so I've really worked to carve that out. And it doesn't mean that I'm not proud of the accomplishments that I have achieved up to this point and the ones that will continue to unfold. I just want to have a conversation where it's very holistic and where people are concerned about like my well-being, I'm concerned about your well-being, you mm-hmm. as a whole person, that if I did nothing today, right? I gotta do something, I'm working. But if I did nothing today except rest and center myself, then that also, right, is something beautiful. And we should be clapping and celebrating that.
You weren't supposed to come in here and be all on my head like that. Listen, that's... That's a weak area for me. And, you know, I think, you know, as you said it, especially for you, someone that is as accomplished as you and someone who, you know, again, yeah, that's a hard pill for us to swallow when we are coming to describe and to do what we feel is giving proper flowers to Dr. Powell, you know. To talk about that, so we miss that part, is that you deserve your rest and your peace and your softness and your ability to... I was talking about Toni Morrison last month.
One of my faves.
That is my favorite author ever in life. I read Beloved in high school. Wasn't ready. But I was a changed person after that. And I was going through all of these different... interview she was doing, and she kept having to defend just writing how she wanted to write and this, that. And it made me think kind of on that same token of what you're talking about, is that always having to defend and not just say I rest and my work speaks for itself while I rest. You know, I don't have to keep showing up to prove. So thank you for that. You almost got me now. I got to change.
No, listen, and I think that there's balance, right? Like, let's talk about whatever, right? Yeah, whatever makes the most sense, let's talk about it. I just think that, you know, as we start out with a question, people get asked those things all the time. And mm-hmm. I feel pressure, right? Like people ask me, they want to know what's the next big thing. And I'm like, I'm the next big thing, right? Yeah. Like me being whole and well. And again, like we can talk about all the things, right? Like I don't want to take us away from that. But I think when we start out with conversation, I want folks that are listening, you know, and being a part of this conversation with us to know that like there is validation and affirmation in your existence and your audacity to rest.
And no, I'm not saying that as if you ruined the interview. No, that point is so powerful. I'm just like, we can't just let this go. This is really like some good stuff. Just because as we go down your resume, we'll talk about important things, but a lot of it, yes, we're talking about the dreamer in you and the desires, you know, back growing up and, you know, when you went to Judson High School. But
that was its own journey, right? Like I was a survivor of Judson High School. Sorry, Judson. Sorry.
Hey, listen, I'm a Sam Houston Cherokee. What?
You know, that's where I started, right?
Really?
My first year was at Sam Houston. I'm going to Sam Houston's class reunion. It's our 20 year. Like I should have graduated from Sam Houston. So my heart is always there. Anybody who knows me from Sam Houston knows like my heart was always there.
Thank you for making me feel old. Yeah. We didn't meet. Right, because this is going to be my 30 year anniversary.
Okay. All right.
So,
well, you're aging well, right?
Thank you.
We look around the same age.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, not at all. We don't. But I appreciate you. Checks in the mail. You and Jason, don't spend it all in one place. You know what I'm saying? But no, like, a lot of things that we'll talk, you know, that we would talk about would be more so focused less on the dream and the desire. Like, we didn't come into this earth wanting to, like, you didn't come here wanting it to be something to be identified as proper to raise Black boys in this world, you know, to have to advocate for children of color, specifically Black children that are getting treated in a certain way, to have to talk about diversity and equity and inclusion and all these things. Like we don't as kids running around in the world dream of doing that work. That is something that an unjust system has placed upon us, and it's an unfair burden that we step up to with grace. But, you know, and so when I'm thinking about all the things we talk about, you know, you inspired me to talk about the dream, you know, the rom-com. I'm really interested in the rom-com because I'm a huge fan of rom-coms. Like, I watch them all, and I don't tell my boys about it. So when they see this podcast, they're going to be clowning me. But, you know, like, I'll be watching all of them, man. Listen, the 90s was the time because that was when all the great 90s and 2000s, all the great Black rom-coms, Two Can Play That Game, and all, you know. Oh, yes. Man, I was in hog heaven.
Keep going, yes. The Wood.
The Wood is my favorite. Listen, I'm out here actually thinking that I'm Michael from North Carolina.
But there's so many. Brown Sugar's my favorite. So
I like Brown Sugar. Like I went through a phase.
No, I didn't like that energy. You said I like Brown Sugar. No,
I love it. I love it. I went through some heavy Sanaa Lathan energy. So like it was the, you know, I had to go Brown Sugar after Love and Basketball. But
Love and Basketball is my absolute, like, nothing touches it.
Right. So I love these movies. It's just that now they've started doing this thing where they go back and they say, we love these movies, but if you think about it, the storylines were trash. And I was like,
I mean, most movies
They make points.
Most movies have the same storyline, right? There's only a couple ways you can
there's
do
only
it.
What there's only
the
little,
acting
yeah.
was good,
yes.
right? The images, the imagery of seeing us on screen was beautiful, and so you know, I mean,
come on, I'm still out here saying Monica, Double or Nothing. I'm still out here.
Oh, listen, I know if I watch that movie right now, I know every single line.
Facts. But nah, you know. Where was I going there? You got me caught up in the rom-coms, but. we talk about the dreaming and we talk about, you know, just just what you bring to the area. So since you gave me permission, though, we'll take a little detour back into the hard stuff, you know, the DEI. Where do you think we're going, especially in this current atmosphere that we find ourselves in, when you talk about diversity and equity and all of these things?
Wow. And that's a very hard question for me, because yeah, I feel that I'm a lot more cynical than I was several years ago. And I've been in these DEI spaces for a while now. And doesn't matter whether it's education spaces, corporate spaces, nonprofit spaces, on and on. You see, you know, medical spaces and healthcare spaces, you see the very same things. And if we're not careful, right? And I say this, I like to have optimism and hope in all that I do, but I also like to center myself in truth. And I'll tell you what it feels like. And I'm being thoughtful of our ancestors. If we think about the Reconstruction era, right? When we think about that time where, you know, Black people were trying to piece their lives together after all of the ills and, you know, and trauma of slavery. And it seemed like there was opportunity for us to begin to repair that harm as a nation, right? And then America did what America does, and we saw Jim Crow and all the things that come with that. It feels like America's in that place where, if you think about Black Lives Matter movement that started off as justice for Trayvon Martin, right, back around 2014, and all the work that happened after that, right, leading us up to George Floyd's death and Breonna Taylor's death, their murders, we get to this place where it's like, all right, America has an opportunity, right? They've always needed to do the repair work, but now we're on another spotlight and another position where America knows that they need to do the work, and they know it so much so that it's not just, you know, us talking broadly about systems. It is very much in your face. The mirror is in front of us, and we have an opportunity to do the right thing. And what are we seeing happen? We're seeing laws being passed, right, that are removing Black history from classrooms, right? We're seeing all of these DEI laws that are beginning to pop up. We're seeing states with the Crown Act, right, that's supposed to protect natural hairstyles, like Texas, where I'm at. We're seeing them find loopholes to discriminate against Black people for wearing their natural hair. And so again, are you gonna hear that noise? Someone just walked in.
That's all right.
So I'll just pick up my thoughts. Sorry, I know you said we can edit and stuff. So we are seeing, like, what we're seeing all across the country is that same kind of energy of, instead of repair, no, we need to control these Black folks and any allies who want to situate themselves with these Black folks before we lose our power, right? And so I feel that's where we are, where we go from here, right? It's going to be a matter of how many people will stay on the porch and watch what's happening, or how many people will get in the streets. And so because we're also living in this space of, well, maybe this don't got nothing to do with me, or maybe this is just how it is, and I just need to focus on myself and my family and my kids, you know, and my situation. And so, you know, I think that the call has to be this idea of, how do we get back to Ubuntu, which is, you know, basically, I am because we are. So what happens to you happens to me. And that goes across race, across gender, across, you know, every single social identity. And so I think that everybody ought to be in the streets saying, we will not settle for this. We will not move in that direction. But if people don't get active and they wait for, you know, the so-called activists to get in front and do this work, then we will see that, because there are laws being passed every day that are making it so.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think to speak of people on the porch and if people on the streets, one of the things I noticed is, you know, obviously looking to create financial resources for our communities and generational wealth and things like that. I tap in with a lot of the generational wealth builders, you know, Earn Your Leisure, John Hope Bryant, you know, these different. And one of the things that saddens me is when you these guys that have and gals, you know, that have made the money and they get to a point and they start saying, well, maybe we don't have to, or maybe, you know, we just have our own. And so I had to counterbalance that with the Tez, you know, Figaro, Angela Rye, Tiffany Cross, Gary Chambers, and those that say, hey, we've got to be involved where they're taking our rights out, because your money not going to do nothing for you if they take your rights away. And I think sometimes we just get mixed up into that, just thinking, hey, we don't have to fight this. We got our own. We living better. When the reality is there's still a stunning majority of us. And just because a few make it doesn't mean that the collective has made it. So I'm glad you said that. We really need to come together on that. That was dark.
It was. And I, you know, and I was hesitant to share what I really feel, but
never.
I think that it's important for us to just center, you know, the truth and the reality of this moment, that some of us, you know, we are sleep and, you know, deciding that maybe it's just too difficult to look out of the window and see what's happening, or, you know, maybe it's easy to just worry about what seems to be in my sphere, but we really got to push, you know, we're in quite the times when I see, you know, laws being passed and anti-Black laws, like right in our face,
We've
seen this before, right? We've seen this before. And so we have to look at, well, when have we seen it? And so I think, you know, that particular time period where, again, Black people were in this moment of, all right, like, we know what we deserve. We know what we want. We've been in that position, like I said, for the last 10 years. And now there are folks in power who are saying absolutely not, and trying to make sure that we know our place in this society, the place that they want for us in society. And so I think that idea of, you know, the construction of, you know, marginalization is really at play right now. They're like, wait, these people are getting too close right to the center. We got to push them back out to the edges. And so I think we have to be willing to do the work. I mean, honestly, we really do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, as I was going through your feed doing my research, I saw a post. I'm definitely going to share that when I'm doing the pub for your episode. But somebody was talking about, well, you posted it and you said, she's a anti-Blackness, racism bully. And you was like, damn right. And I said, that part right there, like, no, we're not going to be comfortable with it. Because what I often have these conversations, and I feel like it's grace on my end, because I don't have to stoop so low as to have these conversations. But what I always say is, has there ever been a time, you know, when I'm speaking with counterparts that are white, or, you know, and I say, has there ever been a time where you had to fight for your basic human rights, equality and all this? Would you ever stand for your children or the people that you love to have that be the starting point? I said, until we can get to that part of the conversation, all the rest of it, because we did I was in an African-American study class a couple of months ago, and we watched a story, and they were talking about in the 60s, these folks were saying, I don't know what else they want. They've got so much. They should be happy with they are. And I'm like, yo, it's 2024. They still saying that. And we like, that is crazy to me. What do y'all think? Like, that y'all have given us something, y'all have taken. Y'all have given nothing.
Right.
So no, it's an important, important conversation to have. So, yeah, you got me. You got the wheels turning. I needed this though. Like that. That's why I wanted to have you on here, because, you know, you don't shy away from these conversations. You're a disruptor. So you started out, you disrupted the idea of defining you as your work, you know, when you can be defined as your presence, and that presence can include rest and peace. You're a disruptor as far as, hey, you know, we've come a long way, but we ain't got there. And we still in a position where we being pushed back and we got to fight. So let's see, what's the next disruptor that we got going on? So how do you balance all of that and family?
It's definitely a dance. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted to move back to my hometown. I absolutely loved our time in everywhere we've ever lived. So you mentioned Nebraska, that idea of once you get on it, you can't get off it.
That's just all Air Force talk.
Oh, I know. And we heard it all the time. And we were there my husband's entire 6 years. So we didn't get off it until he was honorably discharged. But one thing that I will say is that absolutely loved our time in Omaha, loved our time in Los Angeles. You know, we still have a home in Los Angeles. So I show a lot of love to LA. I do a lot of work out in California. But that balance, or that rhythm, as I like to call it, this idea, mm-hmm. it's hard to find a balance, but you can find a rhythm. And rhythm is not easy for me. I can't dance on beat. Just being honest, I can't. I'm one of the few Black people who cannot.
Trust me, it's not a small minority as we would like to make it seem. There's a large collective.
Listen, I cannot. But in my life, I think I had to figure out what that looked like for me. And I think being in San Antonio, having family so close to us, mm-hmm. Is what brought a lot of that rhythm for me. And so, you know, it's one of those things you always wonder, though, or, you know, are you giving too much here, giving too much there? Even, you know, even having moved back and been here now, you still wonder, right? You wonder, like, okay, you know, I'm trying to be present with my kids on their spring break, but I see this email, you know, there's this opportunity. And, you know, I've tried to set some boundaries for myself of when I'll travel for speaking engagements and when I'll say no. And then there's sometimes where it's like, if I say yes to that, though, then that provides a, you know, a vacation for my family. So you have all of these things. But then again, it's like, what moments are you missing? And so, you know, mm-hmm. And my kids, they remember the times that you miss, right? And it's like, I've been at 99% of all the things they've ever done, but they only remember the 1%.
They don't remember the 1%.
Right. And so I have to sit with that, right? And also, I think my journey has been, too, that, like, they remember the 1% right now. And over time, you know, they begin to live and grow. You know, my mother wasn't there for every single, you know, thing. But I think making the most of the time that you have together is mm-hmm. something that I've really been trying to think about. Yeah, quantity does matter, but the quality of that time also matters. So just, you know, new things for me is like just making sure, like, okay, if we're doing something, phone down. That's a journey for me, because I will tell you, I'm a person who doesn't like unread emails or missed calls. And I haven't figured that part out. So like my son's like, I just want to see you go a couple of days without checking your email if it's the weekend. It's just, it's very, very difficult. So I've been trying to work through that. So I say that as like, I'm a super imperfect person trying to figure it out. But it's always in the front of my mind of like, how can I continue to find this balance? And as my kids get older, it's a little bit easier to like bring them for travel if it's summertime or some of those mm-hmm. things, but it's not perfect, right? There are some days you're like, all right, I got to be gone 5 days, or I got to be gone 7 days, or, you know, and you just have to, I mean, you just make the most of it. You know, they kind of, my kids are starting to get in a groove. And I also want them to see too, I guess this is, I'm kind of going on a tangent, but I think one of the things that I also want them to see too, is that like women also, right? Like travel, do things, like even though they have a mother, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty active. I think sometimes they still fall into societal like norms and ways of thinking and being about what Absolutely. A mom can do versus a dad. So like, if my husband worked late, no one's gonna really say anything. If I work late, where are you? Are you dead? Where are you at? And I'm like, whoa, right? And so
knowing your boys,
bring them back to say like, hey, you know, mama travels. And I've tried all of the, it's not easy, right? I remember I told my kid one day, I was like, well, you know, the Obama kids, like they're doing all right. And my youngest son was like, but the Obamas are not my parents, right? Like, and I was like, ooh, all right, yes, I tried.
Oh, I know him out of all of them. Yo, your baby? Oh, no, he ain't hearing none of that.
He was not impressed when I tried to. And I tried to bring up people that they know that are like, look at them. They're out there in the world. You see them always gone. They're like, but that's not my parent. And I'm like, and that's real, right? And I think that's just a piece of it, you know, as a parent, as a wife, as a friend, you know, as a daughter, as all these different hats that we wear. We mm-hmm. want to be as present as possible. And also, like, there's just moments where you can't be everywhere and you can't be all things to all people at one moment in time. And so just a lot of grace as well. Yeah.
Listening to you say that, and I'm just like, you threw that word as imperfect or perfect. And I was like, yeah, I got to jump in there. You know, like, I know that this is your show, but I have to add this to you that we really got to get to the point, especially for us. Like, I don't know for other people, other races or whatever, but especially for our community, perfection is no longer our goal. It's authenticity and showing up real and whatever is supposed to look like a perfect life. No, because, and it's hard because, you know, I'm a single parent, kid in the house, and I stress about every moment away. But the reality is, as they get older and they see what matters, they'll know mom and dad did the right things. They'll be able to look at it in its totality and say, yeah, you know, they did it. Like, when they were gone, it was creating a lot of these opportunities that we were able to enjoy. But they made sure that they were present. And, you know, we had those relationships, but we can't help it as parents, man. Mine is 18 and he's still my baby. You know what I mean? So we can't help it. We can't help it. So I want to definitely encourage you that you are beyond perfect. Perfect is an insult to the value you bring to your professional and personal life. So, you know, and I know that your family would back me up on that.
Yeah, thank you. A good reminder. Of just this idea that, like, moving away and shifting from perfection. So that's a word for me, a continuous word.
Yeah. So how did it feel to get back to San Antonio? Was there trepidation or were you ready to come back? And I ask that because both of us are from the city, you know what I mean? And we know how San Antonio is. We know how our people are. We know, like, sometimes it's good to be away. Sometimes it's good to be there. Sometimes it's good to mix it. So how was the return to San Antonio for you?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And I got to talk about it a little bit in, you know, phases. So my husband was not thrilled about the return. Right. And, you know, really supported me as he's been supportive, you know, for our 15 years. So, but my desire was to always return. Even with all of the complexities of what it means to be Black in San Antonio, to be from San Antonio, all of the things, all of the tension, all of the beauty, all of the joy, all of the pain. But it was always my desire. And I think for me, I think a few things, right? Like, I had lived and been very active in Omaha. Omaha was good to me. I always tell people, you know, that's my second home. I was born in San Antonio. I was reborn in Omaha. LA showed me so much love. Never felt like an outsider. People treated me like I was from there. Mm-hmm. But every day I woke up and I did something. And I always thought about, what about all of the people that, like, I'm connected to in my own hometown, in my own home state, right? And I would be helping people from afar, right? I'd be working with parents who are having issues in education or, you know, in different, like, you know, like, fields. And I would be doing everything that I could to support. And I thought to myself, I'm like, while I was super active in Omaha and super active in LA, and it was needed and necessary, there were a lot of people who were going to continue the work. And I thought, you know, once I left, it would only create more space for someone else. And I thought, this is a moment in a moment in time where I need my family. And I also feel like I need to be connected to community in many of the same ways I was in other places. But the stakes are different, right? Because it's like you're from there. You know these schools, right? You know these churches, you know these, you know, organizations, you know all of these different groups. And I just, it feels different. Every time I do something in community, I can't explain how it feels. It's like it's personal. Even though I cared about every other place that I've ever lived, and like I said, I'm still very active in communities everywhere, I can't explain how this feels. And I think that feeling of just being aligned and feeling like I'm back at the right time and that this is something that was ordained, I think that it helps me get through some of the tensions of, you know, of and stressors of being back in my hometown and some of the politics around those things. And because San Antonio is a different place, right? Like, it is different than the other places that I name, like, and I'm sure that, you know, that there are people who are from LA and from Omaha who probably feel like I feel about San Antonio at times.
Right, right.
But I keep telling myself, whatever we don't like, whatever whatever we don't like, whatever we don't love, wherever the tensions are, like we can change that. And so I've decided that I want to be a part of that. And I want to do the hard work, right? I want to do the hard work in this city. And I couldn't be more thrilled to be back. I think, you know, it comes with its own complications for my kids. My youngest two kids love it. My oldest son, I mean, he was in LA up until 14, right? He's 14. So he's only been, you know, in San Antonio since July. And I think hard transition, yeah, right? Because people dream differently here. And, you know, it's more of a box than there is in LA. And depending on where you are in LA, you are in boxes as well because of society. Right. But I think when you're kind of exposed in LA to like, anything you want is literally in front of you, which is how he was raised in LA. I think he is just trying to find his way. Like kids have different conversations here. You know, all the things. He's like, the black girls in San Antonio don't like me. And, you know, it's like, that's a very strange thing. But he moves different. His conversation's different, right? He's not on this young stuff. Like he wants to buy a house in Canada, right? Like that's different. Yeah. Thunder Bay, Canada, a remote, you know, kind of rural area. So it's like when you have that, you realize, you know, that that's a challenge, but also like, let's move the boxes, right? Remove them, people, so that young folks can see that like, those are just made up, right? Those are just in our way, we're gonna remove them. You can do whatever you want. And it's like, if we can do it in San Antonio, Texas, we can do it anywhere.
Whew. Listen, I might want to come back now after that speech.
Come on back. I'm trying to get everybody back. Like, listen.
Wait, you made me feel something right. I felt that deep. I'm like, yes, there's still work to be done in my city, man. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No, you said that. Like, where do we go from there? At this point, listen. Give us a motto or a mantra that you live by and some strong parting words at this point, because, man, it's time to wrap this baby up in a bow. I might have to go start looking at houses. My retirement will go a long way.
Exactly. Keep that in mind, right? Like, you know, I absolutely love San Antonio. I think we can do the work. There's a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely.
I'm here for it. I would say, you know, there's so many different things that I live by. I'm a words person. I love quotes. I will tell you, you know, kind of related to what we've been talking about, especially if we think about Black community and just think about, you know, who we are and how we show up in the world. I love this African proverb that says, if there are no enemies on the inside, the enemies outside cannot harm you. And so I think about that, like on an individual level, like how do I make sure that I'm good, like spiritually, right? Emotionally, right? Like mentally, physically, all the different things, so that I can do this work each and every day. Like all of those outside forces, if I'm good, right, then we're good. For my household, same thing, right? There's going to always be outside forces that try to rise up. But if we're good in those ways, we'll be fine. And I think about that as a Black community as well, that if we do this internal work together right now, especially during this time, like a lot of those things, though they will rise up, right? We see laws that may come and all these other things, bills that continue to show up, to say that we don't deserve, right? Like a quality life and all of these things. If we can get together and really work as a community, I feel like none of those things will rise up. And so we're at that moment again, and we'll probably continue to have to push as long as we're in this country to come together in that way, to think about like, how do we continue to form and build community? How do we love on each other? How do we push each other? How do we build that intergenerational wealth that you talked about? And how do we do that collectively, where it's not about just one household, but as Black communities all around this nation, how do we do that? And so that's my commitment. It's what I've taken myself up on in San Antonio. I want to think especially about how we're healthier in every single way, financially, right? Like health wise, like in all the ways, spiritually, in every single way, how are we healthier? And so every move that I'm making right now is to take up that health.
Dr. Powell for president. Y'all heard it right here.
Thank you so much for having me. Like, this has been great. I know it's been a long time coming, but you know, I feel like They say God is, you know, always on time and
always on time.
Like, right. I feel like this is that moment where this was right on time.
Yes, yes. Listen, you made my day, my week. I'm excited. This is not even coming out till next week, but I'm just like, yo, they got to see this one. You know what I'm saying? Like, we about to go viral, mama. No. But no, I really appreciate your time. And obviously, we are going to keep watching the amazing work that you're doing, not just community-wise and family-wise, but the work on yourself to give yourself space for grace and rest. That will encourage amazing growth, because just who you are is the amazing part. And so taking care of that is the vital and important part. So thank you so much for coming through. Thank you for being you. We appreciate you.
No, thank you. Thank you. And remember, you can always come back to San Antonio. We need you. We need you.
Y'all are doing just fine without me, man. And I keep, you know, I keep my finger on the pulse, you know, I stay connected, but y'all are doing fine, but you put something on my mind. Now, didn't I tell you that that interview was going to be amazing? Let me explain. There was so much depth and brilliance in what Dr. Powell had to share with us, but one of the things that I really, really thought of as she spoke and as she shared from her experience and from her heart is the type of love that is required to do the work that she does. Listen, when we're talking about revolution and we're talking about marginalized and oppressed groups, and we're talking about systems that need to be purged and destroyed and reinvented and reimagined, there has to be a love. Because I think a lot of times the mistake we make is to think that marginalized or oppressed groups, you know, they're all this kind of person or that kind of person. And what I'm saying by that is that if you do this work, you've got to love the good, the bad, and everything in between. You can't be of the mindset that, hey, I love the ones that are doing this for themselves and all the rest of them. No, you got to take the good with the bad. If you're truly about the work of revolution, of the work of destroying systems that no longer work and are inequitable, then you've got to have a love for everyone that is impacted by that system, no matter how they present or how you may personally feel about their actions, because it is the systems. And people deserve the opportunity to live their lives to their fullest capabilities. And these systems are keeping them from doing that. So we thank Dr. Powell not only for the time we shared with her today, but we thank her for her continued work. And let me tell you something. She almost had me thinking about coming back to San Antonio. But look, I'm going to close like I always do. Listen, I can't help myself. I've got to inspire. I've got to encourage, I've got to empower, but I can help myself by being the absolute best version of myself. And guess what? You can too. So why not we do it together?